17. Introduction. Sky, and for the first time the French Academy deigned to take a look at the problem. Meteorites were born. Here we now face a very similar situation in science. We have tended to ignore it because we didn't think it made sense. It definitely defies any explanation, and hence the situation has evolved where we can't get going because we eight aren't already going. So, here we are with a real meteor shower happening to us. Reports of UFO sightings and contacts are perhaps several thousand times more common than the reports of meteors in the France of the 18th century. Over half of the population of the United States, according to a recent poll, believes in the reality of UFOs. We know nothing of the UFOs, except what they allegedly have told us in the contactees' messages. Indeed, we know nothing about the phenomena connected with telepathy. We have been able to prove that the phenomena exist, that thought can be sent and received with no physical aid. But that is all we have been able to do. We have no rational idea of how telepathy works. In the middle 1930s, Dr. J.B. Ryan of Duke University was able to show conclusively that thought transference between individuals could be achieved and apparently did not diminish with increasing distance of separation. Some of his best results were achieved at a distance or separation of experimental subjects of over 200 miles. An American hypnotist, Stanley V. Mitchell, discovered in 1964 that, while an elderly subject of his was under hypnosis, she could respond to his instructions although she did not understand English. Mitchell, reports the authors of Psychic Discoveries Behind the Iron Curtain, became very interested in this phenomenon. From that book, 8, Fuller, Aliens in Our Skies, pages 6-8. 18, Introduction. Intrigued, he questioned the old woman. She said she could easily understand him under hypnosis. But when you don't hypnotize, all you say is cha-cha-cha. 9. This gives us an indication that language may be no barrier to the transference of thought by telepathy. But to date, there has been no answer to the why or how of telepathy. It would seem that our only choice is to try to consider without bias all reports concerning UFOs, even if they seem to be of an unacceptable nature by our standards. We choose this standpoint not because it has any special virtue but because it has the least amount of presupposition involved that can be consistent with doing anything in the world of physical science. This means that there is a correspondingly higher possibility that a part of the data we have thusly gathered may be of use to us in unlocking the new concept of the nature of the universe that may lie within the data we have gathered. One question very central to this inquiry is, if the UFOs are real, why don't they just land and talk to us in person? I have already mentioned to you that the shroud of mystery surrounding the UFO phenomena is one of its significant attributes. My investigations have led me to suspect that the UFO nauts wish us to remain free either to believe or to disbelieve in them and in their message. This sentiment is spelled out in the alleged messages received telepathically. Let us draw a parallel between a very advanced culture compared to ours and our culture compared to one much less advanced. I have a friend whose father was a missionary to a remote tribe in the New Guinea interior. His was the first white skin they had ever seen. They thought of him as a god, and it took him most of his life to win some of them to 9, Ostrander, Sheila, and Lynn Schroeder, Psychic Discoveries Behind the Iron Curtain, Englewood Cliffs, Prentice Hall, C. 1970, p. 110. 19, Introduction, Christianity. It is interesting to note that they were very much afraid of him, and many of the older tribe members remained terrified of him all their lives. It is ego-deflating to compare ourselves with such a culture, but perhaps the comparison is apparent. Our technology has only been growing and snowballing for a century. Progress seems to accelerate exponentially, and the next century may see many times the progress we have already won. The UFO nauts may come from a culture very, very advanced in comparison with ours. We are aware that the impact of an advanced culture on a primitive one is profound and irreversible. The UFO nauts might be quite reluctant to disturb our culture to the extent which they would necessarily achieve by proving their existence definitively to the world's population. There is another point, too. Regardless of our technological advances, our social-humanistic advances have been almost non-existent, on the average, for centuries. We seem unable to do without warfare, crime, social unrest, mass hypocrisy and selfishness. It is possible that there is a Stone Age culture here, too, which science has overlooked simply because the latter qualities are not tangible, and cannot be evidentially tested with physical parameters. At any rate, we have been contacted, so it would seem, and in this rather unusual and quite unexpected way. If one accepts the hypothesis that there is some direction behind the vast amount of data which has already been sent to Earth telepathically by the UFO nauts, then one must accept the connected hypothesis that this method of contact achieves the desired result better than any other means of contact which they have available. What result do the UFO nauts wish to obtain from sending these messages to us? Perhaps they simply want us to read them, listen to them, and think about them. Perhaps in Time 20, Introduction, we will all find that the new explanation scheme which this body of telepathic messages suggests exists. Perhaps these messages are not so significant philosophically. What they certainly are, no matter what their origin, is a strong and simplistic ethic, or way of life, which puts forth a realizable goal in life, and an easily achievable plan for day-to-day living. You may take the data at either level. Make your own decision as to the value of this material. That is what the UFO nauts suggest, anyway. 21, Carla L. Rukert, editor's preface, 1975. For 6 years, I have been assisting Don Elkins in his research, and I have been involved in meditation groups for 12 years. When Don and I decided to compile a volume of these messages, I was given the task of selecting and editing enough messages to make one volume. These messages are almost always preserved in magnetic tape form. 10 We had hundreds of tapes to choose from, dating back to about 1962, from the Louisville group alone. The supply from other groups went to volumes of printed material, heretofore unpublished, and many other tapes. 11 At the time we decided to prepare this volume, we had just begun a new class or meditation group. All of the participants were just being introduced to the Confederation message, none were channeling as yet. So, faced with the great mountain of old manna, we chose simply to use the new material, as the group developed. Therefore the messages in this book are all selected from transcriptions of channeling sessions collected during the period from December 18, 1973 to May 19, 1974. Even within this limitation, we were forced to omit about half the messages in order to keep this volume a reasonable length. The subject arrangement of the first part of the book is intended to make it easier for you to get into the messages. Go ahead and sample the book, under a subject of Special 10, to examine the archives of our channeled material. Please go to http://www.research.org/transcripts/transcripts_toc_year.aspx. However, in the years that have passed since this preface was written, we have lost some of the audio cassettes of the channelings in this volume, because we taped newer meditation sessions over the older ones. 11 Many of these older tapes have been lost. 22 Editor's preface, interest to you. See how the answer strikes you. Then, explore at will. The last chapter is a selection of messages which are given just as they were received by the Louisville group, complete with greetings, closing farewells, and changes in subject. This completeness makes the messages a bit more difficult to get used to, which is why the subject classification precedes it. Many thanks to Elaine Flaherty, who helped with the typing, to the group members who gave interviews, and most of all to the members of the Confederation, who are the real authors of this book. Carla L. Rukert, 23, Carla L. Rukert's editor's preface, 2009. 34 years have passed since I wrote the words above. I finished tidying up this manuscript then and we sent it out to various publishers, collecting rejection notes. So we tucked the material away in our archives and moved on. We took a whole new tack and wrote a book about the UFO phenomena, Secrets of the UFO, which we published in 1976. This unique and quite cogent volume is still in print and available from L. Research. In that 34 years, much has occurred here at L. Research. In the later 1970s, Elkins and I tried three times to create a screenplay from our novel, The Crucifixion of Esmeralda Sweetwater, which we had co-written in 1969 and 1970. We got as far as interesting a Hollywood producer working with James Coburn, who we hoped at the time could play a starring role in the film version of Esmeralda. So did he, but I never created a screenplay that satisfied the producer. In 1971 and early 1972, Elkins and my work took a wonderfully screwy turn when we contracted with a producer of Southern Drive-In Movies, Lee S. Jones, Jr., to make a genre film. Our reasoning was that if we wanted to break into the film business successfully, we had better learn the business. Elkins and I were told by Jones that any script would be fine as long as it contained sex and violence. Given these parameters, we came up with a screenplay about aliens who were trying, in a particularly ineffectual and haphazard way, to take over Earth. One of the good guys was a magician named F. This character's lines were lifted almost without exception from some of the murkier sections of OSP. The film's working 24, editor's preface, title, The Hidden of Mork Bainjau, was also taken from that august volume. Another good guy, F's apprentice, Prudence, used a psychic self-defense ritual taken from Dion Fortune's eponymous book, Psychic Self-Defense. There was sex, there was violence, above all there was humor and a hodgepodge of metaphysics. Another unexpected turn occurred the day before filming was begun. We had rented the equipment, dressed the set and hired the crew. We had cast an actress who had played topless roles previously as our sex object. However, when she arrived and took a good look at the script, she quit. "I am a movie star, not a comedian," she huffed on her way out of town. At this point, I was deep in creating the shooting script, something our producer-director had neglected to do. At dinner that night, I got food poisoning, and finished the shooting script, the continuity and properties tables, and so forth overnight while trotting repeatedly to the bathroom to be ill. So when we heard that our topless actress had quit, I was in a daze. Elkins quickly outfitted me with a cheap blonde wig, oversized sunglasses and ill-fitting, white go-go boots that were nearly the death of me when we filmed a chase scene in a local park shortly after a rainfall. And I was a star. Fortunately, I knew the lines, having written them. Unfortunately, I never had time to rehearse them even once, and it bothers me to this day that I had no time to do a halfway good job with the part. However, the show went on. During the several days in which my scenes were filmed, I was seldom clothed fully, since I was set secretary and in charge of continuity and special effects, and had many duties to fulfill between takes. It was a unique experience to play the topless role, and perhaps it even added to the film's humor that my top was definitely of modest proportions. The film came out in the summer of 1972, under the title The Girl Snatchers. It had a short run at the drive-in theaters 25, editor's preface, for which it was made. It is still available, though out of print, in videocassette form, put out by Labad Cinema. As far as I know, the movie has exactly one fan, Scott Hutchins, and I thank him. In the middle and late 1970s, Elkins and I kept creating screenplays and being unable to sell them. Our archives files are full of them. In 1975, we were advisors on a film called The Force Beyond, which Elkins quickly renamed The Farce Beyond when he saw the rough cut. A dramatic documentary script we created in 1978 was taken up by a group of producers who had it stolen from them. Four steals after them it came out as a work of pure fiction titled Hangar 18. In 1981, we stopped trying to break into the film business. Our research group began receiving messages from those of the RA group, and those were published, first under the title, The Law of One, in 8.5x11 format, and then under the title, The RA Material, in quality paperback format. This material quickly became popular amongst those who enjoy channeling. Since it covers the same material as the Voices of the Gods manuscript had covered, it did not occur to us, then nor in the years since, to resurrect this present volume. Earlier this year, Ian Jaffray suggested that we gather the archives of channeling work done by L. Research, which by now total over 1,500 sessions, into printed volumes. In the process of preparing these 18 volumes of our collected channeling, the Voices of the Gods manuscript was rediscovered. It did not fit into the archives volumes, since the material it used, from the period of my learning to channel from Don in 1974 and 1975, had been changed from whole transcripts into material sorted by subject. And we had lost some of the original tapes by taping over them, and lost the transcripts I had typed by cutting them up to make the Voices manuscript. 26. Editor's Preface. So we decided to publish this volume separately, under the title, Voices of the Confederation. It is the single largest remaining repository of Don Elkin's channeling. He did not like to channel, and was forced into doing so only in order to teach me how to do it. I was the single original Louisville group member who did not learn to channel in 1962. I agreed to do so in 1974 because our group had run out of channels. After 1975, there are few instances of his channeling except as part of a large circle. So this book is valuable in that it preserves his work. His channeling voice is unique and has the characteristic of coming in many short sentences, rather than in my much more paraphrastic, long-sentenced style. As you read through these pages, you will be able to tell our styles apart easily. There were several places in the original manuscript where I had neglected to find a good quotation for a given subject, or to make a comment on it. I have now filled in those blanks. Since the choice of what quotation to use is always intuitive, this could be the longest running case of editorial whimsy in existence. Thanks go to Gary Bean, who resurrected this manuscript, and to Ian Jaffray, who has produced it for printing as a labor of love. 12. We hope that you will enjoy this material and find it useful in your seeking. Carla L. Rook at Louisville, Kentucky, August 17, 2009. 12. And thanks to Michelle Matossian for the beautiful cover art. 27. Chapter 1. The UFOs, their presence. We have a bogey at 10 o'clock. Hi Frank Borman. Behold, a fairer time is with you than any men have dreamed of. Behold, there is a gladness again in the heavens when a host not of earth is seen of all shepherds. From the Golden Scriptures, comment. This book investigates telepathic contacts, not visual or physical ones. We have not found any attempts made by these extraterrestrial sources to prove their presence. They are interested in teaching, in a free and open atmosphere. The information in this section, then, deals more with their motives in being here than with any other aspect. Since the telepathic contact is conceptual in many instances, the wording of the messages will vary slightly with different receivers. The title, Confederation of Planets in the Service of the Infinite Creator, for instance, is as close an approximation as our language will provide to fit the idea, or concept, of their society. Channeling Selections, January 8, 1974. We of the Confederation of Planets in the Service of the Infinite Creator are here now. Now is an important time. It is time, my friends, for your people to be awakened. It is time for them to understand what is happening. They have slept for a long enough time. We are going to accomplish this, with, 28, Chapter 1, The UFOs, Help. We will be seen much more often in your skies in the coming years. Many questions will be asked. January 10, 1974. I am in a craft, high above you. I am aware of your thoughts, even though I am quite some distance above. I am, at this time, in a craft which is capable of interplanetary flight. This craft has been seen by some of your people. It will shortly be seen by more of them. It may shortly be seen by yourselves, if you look for it. The time is closely approaching now when we must be seen much, much more by the people of this planet. The time is now closely approaching when we must create a high degree of inquisitiveness among your people. They are quite inquisitive at the present, but they are not yet seeking. This is what we intend to do. We intend to provide a stimulus for them. to increase their seeking. The larger percentage of your people, although interested in our craft, are not sufficiently interested to seek an answer to what they see. This we intend to alleviate by stimulating a more intense interest. January 12, 1974. We, the Confederation of Planets in the Service of the Infinite Creator, are waiting to meet as many of the people of your planet as would wish to meet us. The reaction of the people of your planet is quite varied, as to their realization of our presence. Some of them seem convinced that we are here now. Some of them do not believe in us at all. That is exactly the condition for which we have striven. It is a condition which will produce a maximum effort on the part of the individual to seek the truth of our existence, or of our non-existence. This seeking will lead him upon other ideas. These ideas have been presented in many forms in your literature in the past many hundreds of years. 29, Chapter 1, The UFOs. In his seeking he will, if things are correctly progressing, discover certain truths that have been available throughout all time. He will also, if he is fortunate, come in contact with some of the material that we make available through channels such as this one to the peoples of your planet. This condition of questioning, seeking and thinking about things is precisely the condition that we have attempted to generate by our rather nebulous contact. It is always much more satisfactory if the individual finds something out by his own efforts than it is if he is taught a principle. The mental activity required for the individual to seek out and find the basic truths of the creation allows him time to reflect and examine with his own point of view each one of the propositions offered to him. This results in an understanding of the propositions that surpasses any understanding that he could achieve if these propositions were made to him in a relatively short period of time. This, of course, would have been necessary if we had landed upon your surface and directly communicated with the people of your planet. The ways of the Confederation in establishing contact with a planet that has no knowledge of their presence, or the Galactic Confederation, or any of our peoples, is now quite standardized. For this reason, we have chosen to limit our contacts severely. There is, however, only a certain amount of time available to make and establish a contact which will disseminate to as many of your people as possible the truth of this infinite creation, and the true workings of man in it. We will, therefore, be much more in evidence in your skies in the very near future. As I have stated earlier, many more of your people are ready for the truth that we bring than were ready a few years ago. We therefore increase our activity, in hopes that it will increase the seeking of individuals in an attempt to understand us. We must emphasize that this 30, Chapter 1, the UFOs, understanding can come only through an effort put forth by the individual to do so. Without this, there will be very little progress in his development of understanding. January 13, 1974. I am speaking to you from a craft known to you as an OTIV Honor. It is a very, very large craft compared to your standards. It is several miles in length. We have been aboard this craft here above your planet for some numbers of years. It is like a world in itself, and is used for intergalactic travel. Aboard this craft we have all of the facilities that you have in your world, plus many others. February 11, 1974. At this time I occupy a craft that you know as a flying saucer. It is a small craft, approximately 30 feet in diameter, and is capable of landing at any point upon your surface. I am aware of this instrument's feeling of skepticism towards message such as this one. I am going to suggest that he totally relax and clear his mind of thoughts. In this way, I will be able to use him as an instrument in relaying this message. I and my brothers in the Confederation of Planets in the Service of the Infinite Creator are in your atmosphere, and we are also around your planet outside your atmosphere. We are constantly keeping your planet under surveillance. We are constantly ready to serve in any way that we can. February 17, 1974. I am Hatton. I greet you in the love and in the light of our Infinite Creator. It is a very great privilege to be with you this evening. It is a very great privilege to be with you at all times. We of the Confederation of Planets in the Service of the Infinite Creator are here to serve you. This is sometimes difficult. We have attempted to contact the people of this planet through many different ways. We have not always been successful. There have been, in some instances, 31, Chapter 1, the UFOs, misunderstandings about our contacts. There have been, in some cases, misrepresentations, through no fault of the contactee, of what we would bring to the people of this planet. We are attempting to bring to you one thing. We have attempted to do this in many ways, but still we have but one thing to bring to you at this time. We are bringing to you love. This is all that is necessary, for when you are able to receive this love, with it will come the understanding that many of you now seek. March 24, 1974. We have attempted throughout what you would consider ancient times on your planet to bring to mankind, to those who would desire it, the knowledge that is necessary for experiencing all of the infinite experiences created by our Creator. Some of those who dwell upon this planet in the past have accepted these teachings and have benefited from them, benefited far beyond anything that could be imagined by those who are not experiencing the benefits. We have attempted for many of your years to bring to all those who desire the teachings, the very simple teachings that allow you to know all. However, these teachings have not been understood very well. May 19, 1974 Questioner, what level are you on? Have you been on our level? Will we attain your level? How far are you from the final destination? We shall attempt to answer this question. Through our experiences within this creation, we have found that there exists an infinite experience, which is to be experienced by all entities. We of the Confederation of Planets in the service of the Infinite Creator have experienced the type of physical illusion which you now find yourselves experiencing. This 32, Chapter 1, the UFOs, illusion that you are presently in is culminating in what we call its present cycle. The entity asking this question is truly aware of that which he considers the second coming of the Master Teacher, Jesus. These times truly are here, and these times are within the will of the Creator. The times for graduation into a higher spiritual awareness for those who would desire it. We have experienced this same, shall we say, trial, and we sought the truth of creation through meditation. We attained a higher rate of vibration within our spiritual being through this meditation, and evolved to a greater awareness than that which can be attained within this illusion. We of the Confederation are truly aware of the difficulties which you encounter, for as we have stated, we also have experienced your physical illusion. Our, as you say, level of existence is one which you would consider spiritual. It is much more highly evolved than that which you are presently in. Yet the question of the attainment of the ultimate source, or shall we say, union with the Creator, to us, at this time, is something we cannot answer. For we have not evolved into realms higher than the one we presently occupy. Yet we are truly aware of their existence, for in our travels throughout this creation, we have come upon experiences and entities who are able to avail to us truths of even a higher awareness. And they have availed to us the thought of infinite levels of awareness on the path to total union with the Creator. There is much within this creation that we do not comprehend, as there is much that you do not comprehend. Yet we have experienced your present existence, and do have the understanding and realization of a higher awareness. We do not claim to be an ultimate source of information. We are capable of committing error. And I would like to say that, in your experiences, if you encounter any entity who exclaims that he can commit no error, you should truly know that this 33, Chapter 1, the UFOs, entity has erred in that judgment, for only the Creator can function without error. And it is our mission at this time to aid the peoples of your planet in seeking the union with the Creator from within through meditation. Questioner, what is life like on your planet, as compared to our life? Life on our planet at one time was much like that upon planet Earth. However, at this time our entire population of sentient beings has developed a singular desire. This desire began as a simple seeking for understanding, and has developed into a completely unitary and combined ability of each brother of the planet known as Hatton. The combination is so strong that we are able to do many, many things. Feeling and being as one, we are now seeking as one. And as our seeking has led us forward, we have found our way to be pointed directly at service, ever-expanding service, service to all parts of the creation. and as our service has been needed, whereas before we were not capable of discovering the means to perform this service, we became able to perform the service that we came to see as our service. In this manner, we have developed abilities which you may call miraculous. We have the ability to transcend what you know as time and space,